This is Ashoka Changemakers, brought to you by the Innovate Podcast in collaboration with Ashoka and Arch Street Press. Here's your host, David M. Castro.
Today, our guest is Dr. Maureen McMahon. Maureen is the Deputy Superintendent for Academics and Strategic Initiatives at the Anne Arundel County Public Schools. Maureen has earned a master's in chemistry from Villanova University, right here in my backyard, and a PhD in curriculum and instruction for science education from the University of Maryland, College Park. Maureen has been a key leader in Anne Arundel's work with Ashoka's Youth Venture Program, especially on the Changemaker Education Initiative at the district. And that is the focus of our conversation today. Maureen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Great. I'd love to learn a little bit more about your background as a changemaker. I think you have an interesting journey from beginning your studies in chemistry, a hard science. I always love when I meet people who have studied chemistry because I know they're the real deal. And it's not an easy thing to major in science, particularly in chemistry. But then you have a transition to educational leadership, and I think our listeners would love to hear a little bit about that journey for you.
Sure. I always loved the sciences growing up, and I always loved learning the sciences. And chemistry is an interesting science because many people consider it, you know, among the physical sciences, a hard science. But for me, it was very creative. That whole mixing of chemicals and that whole notion of the universe being oriented around reactions that often you can't see, at some level, that was magical. Yeah. So that drew me into the chemistry. And then as I was going through college, I substitute taught my way to earn some money through college, and I fell in love with teaching, especially teaching science. And so that's really that's what got me into the learning end of the spectrum. And then I realized upon getting my chemistry degree that early on, young chemists often spend much more time in the laboratory. And unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way that is for you as a person, you're often alone. Even if you're working in a team, you're actually science happens often by yourself. And so I much preferred the interaction of young people in the classroom. And so for me, the flip really happened then. I was really drawn in magnetically to the learning and especially in the K-12 arena at the high school level.
With having a degree in curriculum development around STEM, I think that must be a very interesting thing in today's world, because we know that, you know, teaching people the kind of quantitative and reasoning required for something like chemistry, it's really a contact sport, and to help students to be engaged, fully engaged as people in that learning. And I'm just curious about the focus of your studies. I think it's always great to ask someone that has a PhD, where did you spend the balance of your work in getting that degree in thinking about science education?
So I had spent a few years in the classroom before going back to my doctoral work, and what I noticed in the classroom, it was really two ends of the spectrum. The kids who fell in love with science and fell in love with the notion of the curiosity and the inquiry needed to be excited in the science classroom, and kids who fell on the other side. Students who were fearful, and maybe they learned that fear really early on, I'm not quite sure, but students who really struggled in the science and math domain. And so when I went back for my PhD work, I was very much interested in the technology use and the media use, especially video at the time, to make chemistry more relevant to all kids so they could see it in their everyday world. Because I believed if they could see it and they could understand that it was all around them, maybe it would be less fearful. They would be less fearful. And in fact, I spent many years and worked at the University of Maryland initially with the Annenberg Project and how chemistry in the video media world really can excite and take down those barriers for students.
That's terrific. So really thinking about the use of multimedia and advanced information technology on how to excite and engage students. And so then tell me this, when was the first time you remember in your career being exposed to the idea of what we would call change maker education and all that brings with it which I think also is about sort of student engagement, and if I can say this, you know, connecting what we learn to what our vocation might be and how we might engage with the world.
I think it happened early on as a young teacher. I had the opportunity not only to teach chemistry, but to teach a physical science class that was co-taught at the time. So it had students in that class who were 18, 19, and 20 years old, who were still really only at the ninth grade level with respect to the number of credits they earned. So many of those students, school wasn't for them. They were certainly cognitively ready for school, but they just did not enjoy school, so they had failed many times. So about half the class were these students, and the other half of the class were special needs students who really struggled with learning disabilities and learning challenges. And I was there with another teacher, and we had to bring these two groups of students together and make a difference. And so we put the physical science to the test, and we took them on the road. And so we did things at the local elementary schools, and they had to prepare, whether it was presentations or Science Olympic days, whatever it was, the idea was that you had to learn how to do the science, figure out how to teach somebody else the science in a really cool, engaging way, and then we took you on the road to do just that. And when I saw these students from all walks of life really step up to the plate in an amazing way, and they were able, these students who had a really tough time excelling at everyday regular school, whatever that meant, had no problem at all making a difference in the young child's life when we took them to elementary schools to help them learn science. And I just knew at that point in time that students could do so much more for themselves and for others than what we in education often assumed and expected of them.
So that when you first were introduced to Ashoka's Youth Venture Program, this was like kindred spirits coming together, you didn't need to be sold on this.
That's right. That is right.
That's great. That transition between, you know, the role of the teacher as sort of the purveyor of knowledge to, I guess, the teacher reimagined as a facilitator of active learning on the part of the student, that's something that is just, it's interesting how exciting that is for teachers. They much prefer to be in that role once they get exposed to it. So tell us about the relationship with Ashoka. Were you there at the very beginning of that, or were you brought in by someone else? How did that happen? I'd love to hear that part of the story.
Sure. We have a very exciting program at our high school level called our Signature Program. And it's a program where communities, we have 12 comprehensive high schools in our district, and each community got together with the business partners and the nonprofit community members, and they actually worked for, in many cases, up to 2 years, selecting a theme that was workforce relevant around which we would build curriculum opportunities and experiences inside and outside the school that linked the business community and the career community to the students' lives. Mm-hmm. And as part of the early days, we had a signature program facilitator, a teacher who wasn't teaching in the classroom, whose job it was to make connections with the nonprofit and the for-profit business community. And in fact, one of our high schools connected with Ashoka because their theme was community development and global citizenship. And certainly Ashoka resonates with both of those elements, right?
Right.
And they found Ashoka, and I can't remember how, and they brought them to a meeting to say, you know, how could we bond together, partner, to bring the work of Ashoka into the lives of our students in one of our schools? And then from there, over the next 3 to 5 years, it just spread like wildfire among, you know, other leaders in our schools, like our STEM, our science, technology, engineering, and math coordinator, and other folks, because the message of young people being able to be change makers right now, not tomorrow and not 20 years from now, but right now, is one that we really resonate with.
That's so fantastic. And I wanted to ask you about that because I think, well, first of all, it's so great to hear the organic nature of that story and how, you know, when an institution like a school district reaches out in a collaborative way, it opens the door for these really amazing innovations to happen. But then this thematic, you know, this idea that every student can be a change maker and the whole thing, which I understand is kind of the umbrella, I am a change maker. So that's something that is owned by the community. How did that come about? Was that something that emerged from the dialogue with Ashoka, that overall thematic?
The interesting piece in Signature was that we were trying in our own way to help young people understand that they had to take ownership of their own career paths. Mm-hmm. And they had to meet people, they had to engage with people who walked the walk of many careers in which they were interested, and they had to experience the lives of those people, not only the book learning, but also what is it that these people do for their careers. Well, when we met Ashoka, the notion that they literally, the students, in a social kind of way, could take what they were learning in the classroom and the disciplinary knowledge and the people that they were meeting in all these various careers related to whatever theme, the workforce theme was at their school, and they could do work now. And that's what was beautiful. And so the Ashoka Professional Development for the teachers, helping the teachers understand that this was something that they could start thinking about their students as change makers now. And then a little bit about what a change maker actually is, because some teachers resonate with that and some teachers take a little while to resonate with that, right? And so all of that together were the first steps that we took, you know, as partners. And then little by little, that got richer and richer over time.
So I want to discuss this in a little deeper way, exactly how this happened. And I want to see if I'm hearing it right, because I've done some reading and I've actually heard some others in your team talk about this. It seems like there was really an effort to build the culture through teacher engagement, right?
Yes.
Then there was something that happened in curriculum innovation. And then there was actually a really great strategy to roll it out. So if I have those three sort of elements right, if you could tell us a little bit about each part, that would be beautiful. And maybe start with just the teacher engagement program, because what I'm understanding is that you offered people an opportunity to opt in, and you didn't say like, okay, now we're going to do it this way and force it on everyone, but you really opened the door and invited the change leaders to the table.
That's right. We said, you know, we're going to offer an opportunity to let you delve into change making. And we gave them a little teasers about what that might look like. And then we put that out district-wide. And district-wide is a lot of people, because we have 81,000 students. And we said to teachers and administrators all over the district, please come if this touches you in any way, for our couple of hours of professional development, and get on board. So basically we said, you know, we fed the hungry. The people who were willing to come, those were the people who received the initial PD. And we went with that model, with the notion that we didn't want to fight an uphill battle initially. We wanted to get people on board who already thought this way, or at least were willing to say, I want to learn more.
Right.
And so it 2-3 hours into the PD, into the professional development opportunity, I mean, you could just tell these were kindred spirits. These were people who believed in their hearts and souls that students could be change makers, you know, from very young ages, and that they, as teachers, wanted their young people in their classrooms to believe this. And that's another piece of it, that you as the adult have to believe it. And at some level, you have to believe in yourself as a change maker too. And so that was the beginning. And then what we did is follow those people, and we supported them in small ways. Some of them only wanted to do little things in their classrooms, and some of them wanted to change the world. And so no matter big or small, we followed them and supported them with additional professional development. In many cases, we went out to their schools, we talked to them. In some cases, we brought Ashoka folks to them. And very organically, as you earlier, you know, commented, very organically it grew, and it didn't matter to us. It was not one way. It was any way it needed to happen. Individual seeds planted in different parts of the district. and we grew and helped them grow and flower. They really drove the train of change making in each of their classrooms and buildings.
What a great way to be authentic about the whole thing, too. That's just, you know, wonderful to let your people lead the way. It takes a lot of organizational strength to do that because you have to trust, you know, what they're going to do. Could you tell us a little bit of examples? Like, I'd love to hear just some examples of what that PD consisted of. Is it Ashoka bringing in examples of what they might do in the classroom? Is it Ashoka exposing them to change-making exercises to sort of nurture their own flame of change-making, maybe a little of both? What does it consist of?
Sure. It is definitely Ashoka being involved, and it's Ashoka telling stories of things that have happened all over the world. Small examples where one child or a small group of children have decided to do something that have now touched lives of people, you know, globally, all the way to large number of people choosing to do one single thing. And so what happened was in this professional development, and it's very interactive. So it's storytelling, and it's right. And it's people passionate about their dreams. Their, you know, if you could dream the biggest dream for your children, what would it be? And then what are the first steps to getting there? And so the PD was, I would call it almost spark-like. It was meant to spark a fire, but not do it all at one time. The idea right. was when people left, they were excited to go out, think more, and then come back. And so it was exciting.
So now when you – so that's very helpful to understand. So it really is – it's inspirational. It's not didactic. It's not like mm-hmm. you took people in and said, okay, here's how you turn your classroom into a change maker classroom. It's more like engaging people in that work, and then they're going to – I think a word that Ashoka likes to use in this regard is co-creation. So
yes.
we're going to work on this together and come up with really new approaches. But then there's a process. I love your metaphor of, you know, you got these seeds that are planted, and now people are going to maybe grow different examples of this. And so here you are. You have a PhD in curriculum design. So I'd love to get your sort of sense as a really an expert in this field. What kind of curricular innovations came out of this? Because this is something that's very easy to embrace on a vision level, but when the rubber meets the road, you know, and you say, okay, now we're going to take this chemistry class, or we're going to take this science class, and we're going to really infuse it with change maker strategies. What does that look like when it really materializes in the classroom? Could you give us some examples?
Right. So I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's easy to say how wonderful, and it's very tricky to say, and this is how we're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
And so, I'll give you an example right now that's going on in our own mind. We're getting ready to do a big lift. We're going to take environmental science, which is our ninth grade course, and it's brand new. We've had environmental science as an elective for years in the upper level, but it's going to be our ninth grade course, and the whole idea is change making, relationship building, and an understanding between students and their personal, local, and global environment, and the impact they can make.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and we have 5,000 ninth graders, right?
Wow.
So with 5,000 ninth graders, and we have a science coordinator who is willing but has never walked this walk before, right? And many of our science teachers often, you know, didn't go through programs where this was how you learned science, right? And so we're in the process right now of thinking about what do you do? What do you do with the standards? And what do you do with how do you have the conversations that really talk about limiting content and increasing process? And how do you have the conversations around what the students really need as opposed to what we've traditionally given them? And once we're through a lot of those conversations, sprinkling in the examples all over the world of what people have done with change making with students, and so many of the examples are environmentally related, right? And little by little, people are moving towards the place where they believe they can do this now. And so we're getting ready to do that. But people are in a place where they're really excited now. We're going to do this. We're going to do it in modules, 9-week modules. We're going to have engagement, field experiences, and students are going to produce, whether those be, you know, and they're going to produce things that they choose and that they feel in their heart are necessary related to the content and the issues within the curriculum. So that's what's so exciting.
So some of the paradigm shifts we would see would be from sort of individual work to group work.
Yes.
It would be from recapitulation to more problem-based and project-based learning. Is that true?
That is
true. And also we're going to explode the classroom. We're going to basically go out into the field. We're going to go out into the community, and we're going to have a learning environment that's much broader than what was before, which might have been in the classroom and in some cases just restricted to a book. Am I hearing that right?
And we're going to bring in our partners. So if students want to explore water quality and something to do with their everyday world, we're going to bring in the partners that we have around us, either Skype them in or bring them in physically and actually have them be able to be resources to the students, because that's another piece that's such a big deal about this in my mind and the minds of my team, that young people have to know they can reach out and have a network of resources at their hands while they're young, because they have to know that you don't change the world by yourself.
Right.
You change the world through relationships.
This episode is brought to you by Arch Street Press and Better to Speak of It, fostering relationships and results through creativity. Better to Speak of It focuses on core management and personal values in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall. The book offers specific firsthand experiences from the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the Museum of Modern Art and the New York Public Library, as well as major performing artists such as Jesse Norman and Michael Tilson Thomas. Better to Speak of It, available now from Arch Street Press.
So this experiment is now going on with ninth graders. It's going to go on across the whole district. Am I hearing that right?
Right. It's the first time that we've moved in this direction where we're going to do something big. We're going to plant a big tree.
Wow. Amazing.
Right. And that's after, you know, 5 to 7 years of right. The little saplings and individual classrooms. So we've learned so much from individual teachers. And then they're going to come together to help us now do something bigger.
And what's also amazing about that story, I think listeners are going to get this, but I want to highlight it, that, you know, you're really illustrating how you can take something like it's a natural science, you know, environmental science, but now it becomes also an opportunity for all that social and emotional learning, all that relationship building. So it really is, you know, people say, well, how do you teach empathy while you're doing science? And here's an example, because there's so much in a personal work that's going to be required when it's taught this way. Am I hearing that right?
That's spot on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We need the students while they're learning, in this case, environmental content, and they're thinking about things that matter in the world to them, that they also understand that people matter, and those relationships, as they build relationships, whether it be through the resource professionals we, you know, bring to the table, or whether it's their student, their peer next to them, in the seat next to them, that we need to treat each other well, and we need to learn how to navigate this world with respect and trust, and move through that at the same time as we're learning what falls so naturally into traditional school, which are the disciplines.
And I just want to also back up a little bit to hear the trajectory for how you got there, because I think that's an important part of the story here, that you know, you started this program by recruiting sort of apostles of change, and then they went back out, and so they were doing a lot of smaller experiments that maybe touched individual classes and individual grades. Am I hearing that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and so here's an important question. You know, you said, so now you're 5 to 7 years into this journey. Can you tell me, what have you learned that is surprising or perhaps unusual that you'd want to share with people? And both in the sense of, hey, here's an asset, and then also maybe here's something you want to avoid.
Well, the really good news is that sometimes the educational community takes a while to move to something new like this. Not negatively, it's just slowly. But the outside community, the business community and the nonprofit world does not. They embraced us immediately. Wow. Anyone we asked for any help, any support, any information, could you Skype in to talk to this group of eighth graders who want to talk about building a planetarium? Anything we ask of any community members, it was always absolutely. We'd love to be helpful. So that's great news. So it gave time for our educators to slowly change, but it also showed our educators, well, if the outside world is willing to embrace this, we don't have to be afraid. We can move more in this direction, because if they're willing and they're able to talk to our eighth graders and they're able to talk to our fifth graders on any topic, any time, then they're buying into the change making. So it made it easier for our educators to buy in.
So that's a key lesson that, you know, when you're trying to work on institutional change, that your external partners can be an asset in building the energy and momentum around that. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Very, very helpful. They yeah. couldn't have been more helpful.
Yeah, and it is terrific to see. I think it's one of the things that really gives you hope in this world that sometimes is lacking a lot of hope, that people want to really come around schools and support them. I mean, I think yes. there's so much goodwill, and you know, when you can generate that much goodwill, things can't be so bad.
That's right.
So I want to ask you this. There's a very moving video of a teacher probably a few years back. I'm sure you've seen it. Jen Johannes is, I think, her name. And she talks about, very emotionally, about what the change-making program means to her as an educator. And it's quite clear that this philosophy of learning is touching something very deep in her calling to be a teacher. She talks about contrasting this to what she calls the testing approach. And she says that approach goes about stamping the life out of everything, which I think is a great phrase. And so I'd love for you to comment, just from the perspective of an educator and an expert in this field, you know, where are we nationally in this transition? You know, it seems like we've been through a big thing about testing, about assessment, about measurement, about accountability, in a way that is somehow in tension with what people feel is the real mission of education, in terms of, you know, what I would call the heart part of this, the calling, and what brings people to want to serve kids in this way. But it seems like that's in transition now. I know that's a big question, but where do you see that now?
I definitely think that the whole nature of testing and accountability is changing. The idea that, you know, we had grown into testing, in some cases, really being a driver and instruction being secondary. And so I think the pendulum swings back and forth and back and forth in education ever so slowly. But we are moving more to a center spot where, yes, in fact, assessment's not going away. And we have to know what our students are able to do and what they're able to do with the knowledge that we help them gain over the time they're in K-12 grades. But we're moving more to a place where folks are looking for students to build relationships, be in healthy environments, understand what it means to be lead a healthy life, what it means to have wellness in your plan. All of those things are not new to the world, but they're new to education to some degree. That place where we're looking for students to be college and career ready, those are the new terms being used, but really meaning we want them to feel like they're on a journey where they're exploring careers and they're exploring the ability to think, what do I want to do when I leave 12th grade? But we want them to be ready, certainly, for college, and we also want them to be ready to walk into internships and apprenticeships. No matter what their passions are, we want them to understand that they need to hone their passion and their interests, and that it's not all about test scores and accruing a portfolio so that you can open the door of college with a full scholarships, etc. While that's important, that's not the end all and be all. And we want students to believe that this is truly a journey. And when they're 18 years old, 17 years old and leaving us, we want them to believe that many, many doors are open to them and that they have the skill set to work with people, because we've taught them how to network. We've taught them how to speak. We've taught them how to be social. We've helped them groom their own skills in being a young person with not only a plan, but with confidence in themselves and with a heart and empathy towards others in the universe.
I think one of the things that's so interesting about that last comment that you just made, which I completely concur with, and it's that, you know, in all the talk about assessment, it's so palpable that teachers understand and school leaders understand the importance of this whole development of the person. And yet in our assessment, it's that whole development that often is missed out on. You know, we know, we can tell people very concretely, you know, about mathematics and literacy and, you know, things like that. But we really don't have good measures of some of these other things that we know are so essential to success in life and meaningful vocation. And so that's definitely, you know, a work in progress. I think the other thing about this is that with that gap in our knowledge about how to assess in this social and emotional learning, and again, that work often takes the back seat. What can you tell us about that? How do we sort of rearrange that and maintain a focus on these things, on the whole development of the child as we move forward?
Well, it's interesting. We're in the middle of building our next 5-year strategic plan right now. At the same time, all of this work is going on in the background. Traditionally, our strategic plans and most strategic plans around the nation are focused on the core, focused on the content, focused on readying a student to be ready to move on with their life after they leave high school and go on to college, et cetera. And many of the indicators or metrics that are set up are about how well students do, how well they perform on achievement tests, et cetera. This strategic plan conversation that started about a year ago, and we have stakeholders from all over the system involved, inside, people who work for us, but also outside, community members, business professionals, students, hundreds of people have been involved. And the 5 core values that have floated to the top are about being nice to one another, health and wellness.
Yeah.
They're all about the nature of recognizing the good in people and setting students up for leading lives that are rich when they leave high school, right?
Isn't that great?
It is great. I mean, it's great. And I don't want to say it was surprising, but it was enlightening and heartwarming that's what's coming out. And that's from parents, and it's from business professionals, and it's from people from all walks of life that are basically saying, help our students get ready for a life where they're good people and they have the skills to have a good job and give back to their communities and feed their families. I mean, that's what they're saying. And that's wonderful, because that fits what we're doing
right. So
well. And so I think we're poised to really listen, and we're taking our time with this, because we're really trying to listen and figure out, okay, now how do we move from here? Because as you said, how do you assess these things? They're not the traditional things we would assess in education, right?
I think it's one of the hidden strengths of the American education system, that it really maintains this robust ability to innovate and to experiment with things that are, you know, beyond sort of what's being discussed in foundations and government bureaucracies.
Okay.
I think it's a powerful, underappreciated value in the system, the local management and the dispersion of control, you know. So this story certainly is about that. We're coming to the end of our conversation, and so you're a very experienced educator and somebody that is well into the trajectory of your career. And, you know, if we were using the mountain metaphor, you're up the mountain. But we know that there are others coming behind us and people who are just starting their journey. And I'd love it if you could give maybe a few words of wisdom, simple things that you've learned along the way for somebody who's starting out. What would you say to them as a guide?
I would definitely say be nice. I would just say that. Yeah. I mean, I really, down to my very core, you know, a smile and a good morning mean more than you can count, right? And so that's a big deal, though, because sometimes we tell young teachers, we say, you know, don't smile until the holidays, don't smile till January, because those students need to know you mean business. And what we're now saying to young teachers is, if you can build those relationships with students first, you're going to have all the doors open to you to reach those students, because they're going to want to learn with you and for you for the whole rest of the year. So we're trying to tell our youngest folks, take time, even in this fast-paced world, to build friendships, relationships with people, because in the end, it's going to be the people-to-people relationship that allows you to form teams, that allows you to work together collaboratively, and allows you to leverage your great ideas into amazing things. And that's always served me well, but we're trying to teach our youngest employees to do that now. And we have a phenomenal superintendent who believes in this down to his core. And so that makes it even easier to do.
Fantastic, fantastic. That's a great place to leave the conversation today. So, Maureen, I just want to thank you so much for your work and your leadership Anne Arundel. We're really looking forward to speaking with you again in the future and hearing about how all of this amazing work is unfolding.
Thank you very much for today. Thanks a million.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Aspire and Innovate are produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press. For PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.